This is Booktown. You're new here, aren't you? Maybe I should show you around. You can get anything you want here. Anything you want. Anything you desire. Anything you can imagine. It's all here. It's all free. It's all for you. Come on. I'll show you around. If you've got the guts. This is Booktown. You can get anything you want here. Anything you need. And this is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I'll be with you till 2 p.m. We have two items, people, events, activities of local interest in the next hour. In the second half of the program, I'm going to be talking with Penelope Curtis and Dave Comstock about the upcoming Historical Preservation Conference that's going to take place in Nevada City in May. And some of the book events that are related to that. Right now, though, I have Molly Fisk, who is well known in a dozen different ways in Nevada County, primarily as a poet and teacher, and lately, I guess you could say, as something of an impresario of poetic events, and also to people who listen to KVMR. She does her weekly essays on the news here. She's been a regular on Steve Baker's program. And if people remember back to the salad days of Booktown, she was my co-host in the distant, distant past. That was a time when this program was something of a banter fest, because anything I could say, I could count on Molly coming up with a pretty quick rejoinder. Right now, it's just me droning on. Well,
oh, piffle.
Not oh, piffle. You see, that's the kind of rejoinder you get from Molly, and I miss it very much. And I'm only going to be droning on here for another 5 months, so I'm glad to have had, or to have Molly in for at least one of those programs. There's, I think, nine more after today, maybe something like that.
Wow.
Anyway, the main occasion, I've tried to get Molly back in a number of times and failed, but now she has not only a book, but a book presentation coming up in the near future at a location whose name cannot be named, but we can say everything else about it. And why don't you start out just by telling us what the book is and where you're going to present it? When I'm going to present it.
It's my new book. Today is the publication date, although I've had a couple of copies for a week now to sit around and admire. It's called The More Difficult Beauty. It's a book of poems. It's my second full-length collection of poems, and it's out from Hip Pocket Press in Orinda, California.
And if you go out and buy it, you get a lovely red cover with what looks like red tiles, or is it red shingles?
I think it might be scored concrete.
Scored concrete.
In a South American country.
That has been, I guess you would say, invaded by small white and pink flowers.
Called alyssum.
Oh, that's alyssum.
Yep.
I see what my eyes are doing. Whereas I have a pre-publication chartreuse copy. I guess I'm going to have to buy a real one.
Someone might give one to you. You never know.
Well, actually, this one I've already pawed around
in a fair amount.
So I think I'd actually prefer to keep the chartreuse one.
Well, you could certainly keep the chartreuse one.
Okay. A couple of questions. The last book you did came out 10 years ago, the last book of your own.
Yes.
That's a long time to go between books, but poets work very slowly, and you work very deliberately.
And I was trying to get it published for quite a long part of that 10 years. Although this book does have poems in it that are from as recently as last summer. It's also got poems that are 20 years old in it.
Right. There's a couple I recognize from Terrain. the mm-hmm. the book you did with Dan Bellum, and Forrest Hamer in, back in 98. Mm-hmm. And I did notice that there's one reference to the Iraq War beginning five years ago.
Yes.
So that was obviously written a few years ago.
Yeah.
How much do you write in an average year?
It varies depending on the year, and I have recently boosted my production dramatically by doing something on Facebook, which was to write a poem a day for the month of April last year, National Poetry Month. Someone who works for a magazine got this idea and decided to run it on Facebook, and I think he had about 700 people writing poems every day, and he listed them all in a blog, and it was quite a production. But I realized after I had done that it was a wonderful thing for me, and I did it again in June and again in September. So that's 120 poems I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Did any of them make it into this book?
Quite a few.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too nosy, but you want to just tell me a couple of the ones that came out of that forced production?
I have no idea without looking at the table of contents,
okay.
But I can
well,
do that.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Yes, Deconstruction came from that. It's All Poetic, What I Want, Not Nantucket.
Not Nantucket is a
So at least
nice
five
one.
Of them.
Yeah. Now, I interrupted. I want to get more into the book, but I realized that 2 minutes ago I interrupted you. We were starting to talk about the actual presentation. And
yes.
I think we should get to that first and then talk a little more about the book itself.
So I'm launching this book officially on Saturday, the 13th of March at 4 p.m. And it's at a local coffee shop and bookstore that Eric doesn't want me to name, but I'm not quite sure why. Shall I give the address?
You can give your... on the poster, it just mentions the coffee roasters. And I guess the main reason is that who do programs here are not supposed to get any semblance of financial
benefit from
talking with anybody. And I don't know if I will or not. I imagine anyone who comes into the store that day will be buying your books rather than mine.
And I'm not giving you any kickbacks. I'm so sorry,
And you're
sorry,
not giving
Eric.
Me any kickbacks.
This is happening at Sierra Mountain Coffee Roasters over on Maltman Drive in Grass Valley. And it will be me reading from the new book, and also some people I know will be reading poems of mine, some from this book and some from other books of mine. And then I'm going to read some poems from four or five of the people I consider to be my teachers. So there's kind of a wider stretch than just me in this one book.
Now, not too long ago, we can mention another event you had at Sierra Mountain Coffee that was wildly successful, just barely 2 weeks ago.
For Valentine's Day, yes. It was an erotic reading run by Bill Lee, and there were eight official readers and I think five or six people who stopped by and read things. And it was a packed house. It was really fun. And I hope we do it again next year.
And my guess, though, is that even though you were there 2 weeks ago and will be there 2 weeks from now, you'll probably get a lot of people again because they'll want to know what you're up with or what you're up
what
to.
What I'm up to. They will. And, you know, I've sent out invitations to people I know, and I've postered the town lavishly because I'd like to have lots of people come. I'm really happy that this book is in the world, and I wasn't sure it was going to be, so.
How come?
Because it took so long for me to find a publisher, because some of the material is about abuse, which is one of my subjects, but it's not necessarily something people are dying to read about. So.
And I would, this is a little hard to say comparing this with other ones, but I would say that some of the poems in this book are a little more pointed than in your earlier ones.
They are. They are more pointed. They're a little, a couple of them are a little angrier.
And there's one that involves both your parents, which I believe is not an actual occurrence, although maybe I shouldn't say anything.
What makes you believe that?
Just from what I knew from other things you'd written in other ones
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
how shocked and how much in denial your mother was, and that made me think it was unlikely that she would have been involved in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But Molly is smiling, but she's not saying anything.
I'm not sure I'm going to go into the details here on the radio.
Okay.
You can come to the reading and ask me specific questions. And I'm pretty, it's my policy to answer as truthfully as I can about specific stuff, particularly if you've got the same history that I have.
And as I say, they are more pointed, you say more angry, and I would definitely agree with that. You have the book divided into a number of sections, and one of them is, well, I'll just start with a couple of blood, water, sugar, but right in the middle is anger, and those are probably the fiercest ones.
Yeah, I didn't, this structure came about only maybe a year and a half ago, and seemed like an appropriate structure for the book because some of the poems are hard to read. I didn't want to have them all in one place. I didn't want to overwhelm a reader. And actually, my friend Maxima Khan was really helpful with putting the book in the order once I had figured out that I wanted to have lots of small sections. Anger only has three poems in it.
Right, that's true, but they're pretty intense. Now, I looked back at your earlier book, Listening to Winter, and it has four sections, but they are even though they're more specific, in a way they're more nondescript.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's one called The View from Here and Where is the Lake of Dreams, which refers to a poem, but they don't really focus you, whereas the section titles in this book are very strongly focused.
Yeah, I wasn't... this book has gone through about 8 different iterations, and ordering a book of poems is for yourself, I think, is incredibly hard. I can do it for other people pretty easily. But I know too much about each of the poems to be able to step back and see a functional order. So when it turned out that elemental delineations might be a way to do it, I really was happy to find that.
And then you said that you got help from Max Khan. Did she then put them in the different categories? Or
they were in... I had identified most of the categories, although I think she brought in time as one of them. And I had poems in the categories, and she helped me move a few poems around. The big thing that she did, and this is why everyone needs to have friends, is that I had a different title. And she looked at the poem that I had pulled the title from and went up a line and said, this is a much better title. So the more difficult beauty was the line before what I had, which was the back of the... What was it?
Underside of the leaf.
The underside of the leaf, the back of the fabric.
Right. Though the title of that particular poem, How to Be Lonely, is pretty forceful too. And I think that's something you write about a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the time, it's almost at the end of the book that you get to appreciate the more... I'll just read a little bit. And you will live alone, unharmed on an ashy plain. Appreciate the more difficult beauty, underside of the leaf, back of the fabric. And by that point, you've already read an awful lot of undersides of leaves and back of fabrics in
mm-hmm.
these poems.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would say that if I had to find one or two particular threads in all your work, one is your personal history and the horrors and the losses and so on, but another would be appreciation and very... very sensuous but very subtle appreciation of everyday things.
Thank you. That's definitely something that I care about.
There are a number of poems in here that came from that earliest collection, Terrain, and then I went back and looked at Listening to Winter, and I noticed you'd pulled 4 or 5 from Terrain for that, and you pulled a couple for this book too.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pick them just because, well, I got to stick something in there, or because those are ones that particularly fit? That's a loaded question, I know.
Well, luckily, it's because they particularly fit. And it's not common to take poems from an earlier book and put them in a later book, but that book was self-produced. I did it with my 2 friends from my writing group, Dan Bellum and Forrest Hamer. And so even though it is an actual book, it's not something that was widely distributed. So for people to see those poems, I think it's good to stick them in another book.
And what was so interesting about that book, and I don't know if you did it intentionally, but of course the voices aren't, it's not just Dan, Molly, Forrest in three sections. The poems are interspersed. And there is a, I don't know if I could describe the flow, but there's a definite flow of sometimes you'll be 1, 2, 3, then 2, 2, 1, 3, 1, 1, mm-hmm, two, and so mm-hmm. on. And the sequence you put them in the new book is, of course, entirely your own, but things that might have been close to one another in the earlier one are maybe at opposite ends of the book now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you wrote 120 poems this year, how did you decide which? I mean, 120 in those 3 months, how did you decide what to put in this book?
As I said, I had structured this book. I'd put this book together probably starting in 2003. And then it had gone, almost every year, it had undergone a title change, and I'd taken some poems out and put new ones in that were from the current year. So there was a momentum to it. There was this, you know, if not the actual structure for the book, there was a lot of thought already put into it, and certain poems just seemed like they should be part of this book. They fit. I had a whole other group of poems that were in here, and the book just started to get too big. And I've always wanted to write a book about rivers and water and the things that I'm around a lot here in Nevada County. So I pulled all of those poems, and they form the kernel, the sort of center piece of another book that I've got that is written and that's making the rounds among publishing houses and contests at the moment.
But you didn't pull the one about the Truckee River, and you didn't.
No, I didn't.
And you didn't pull the one about the Seine.
Nope. Or about the Charles.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've got lots of rivers in your life.
It's just a lot of rivers everywhere.
That's true.
The next book is dedicated to all the rivers. That was very fun.
So what? Now that the other next one, I don't want to switch to the next one too quickly, but now that it's ready, are you going to be going have to go through the same process of looking around for somebody to publish it, or?
I don't know. You never know that beforehand, particularly. I have, that's a very nature-oriented book, but I've also, since I put it together, written a whole bunch of love poems. And my intention is to probably send it out as is for another couple of months. This is a big contest season. So March and April I'll be sending it out again, but probably in May, if it hasn't been picked up yet, I'll take it apart and weave the love poems into it.
What do you mean, a big contest season?
Oh,
The Academy Awards are over this week.
One of the ways that poets get published is to enter contests. And there are, it's probably easiest to get a first book published this way, but it's one of the only ways that poets get published. If you don't have a publishing house like Norton or Knopf or Penguin or somebody who's picked you up, those houses are very reputable and hang on to their poets. But lots and lots of us don't have a consistent publisher year after year. So we're always out there looking.
You mentioned earlier that you were going to read some poems in a couple of weeks by the people you consider your teachers.
Mm-hmm.
You can mention names now or not. That doesn't matter. I can sort of guess who some of them are, but do you want to say it now or do you want to wait?
No, I'm happy to say it now. My actual teachers, the people I studied with, really I've got one primary teacher, and that's Dorianne Locks. And she's the person to whose living room I went on Tuesday evenings for 4 or 5 years without knowing anything about how to write poems. Although I had started to write in the first place by reading Mary Oliver. So I consider her to be one of my teachers, even though I have not met her. And then there are a bunch of other contemporary, mostly women, but contemporary poets whose work I've studied a lot, and I've taken classes with some of them, Kim Adonizio and Carolyn Forché and Sharon Olds up at Squaw Valley. There's probably a list of 10.
Mm-hmm. And you also have had now many students.
Yes.
You teach physical classes, and you also have your online poetry boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
How has teaching affected your writing?
Oh, my Lord, it's made it much better. Partly because I've done so much looking for good model poems to show people how things are done, and partly because my students, I mean, I think I have a friend who says, you can't teach anyone how to write poetry, that's just ridiculous. And since I make my living doing this, I sort of disagree, but I don't entirely disagree. I think what you can do for people is show them what everybody else is doing, both historically and contemporarily, and say, you know, I can't help you generate your own information from your imagination, you know, your voice and your style and what you think about is all going to come from you, and it's not something I don't think that can be taught per se. But I can show you what everybody else that I know is up to and show you how to do some really simple tricks, like make sure your metaphors work with each other instead of pull apart what you're trying to say. Make sure you're not repeating things without doing it on purpose. I mean, look at different techniques that people have to make a poem as compressed and emotionally interesting as possible. I mean, that's easy to teach, and that's really all I teach. And what I do is provide people with deadlines and my own enthusiasm for poetry, which is something that matters to me more than just about anything else.
A couple of minutes ago, you said when you started out and you didn't know what to do, and then got together, started learning from Dorian Lox. People may not know that poetry is a career you picked up, not quite in midlife, but almost.
I thought it was midlife at the time. I was 35. Now I think, wait a minute, that was very young. But that was 20 years ago.
And just for people who may not know, what were you doing before that?
I had had several careers. Right before that, I had been a banker in Chicago for First National Bank, doing loans to Fortune 1000 manufacturing companies. I had been a sweater designer. I had been an independent investigator for the EEOC. I'd been a waitress in a French restaurant in Massachusetts and a Norwegian restaurant in Norway. I'd done a whole bunch of stuff.
I always think of you as a banker, though, beforehand.
I was only a banker for 3 years. But
that's lot longer than I could do it.
It was those ruffled shirts and women wearing stockings and then, you know, Reeboks. That was the era I was doing it in, so there is a visual image I have of myself that's pretty ridiculous.
Which brings to mind some visual images in here, like it just came up, the past is another neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of others that maybe particularly tend to jump out at me, because to some degree they're a bit more male-oriented, like The History of Men or American Riddle.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to read one, not necessarily of those, but something from here? To give people an idea of what they'll hear in a couple of weeks?
Sure. One of the great benefits of this new book is that there are actually page numbers in the table of contents, which was a mistake. The only mistake, in fact, a typographical mistake in the first book, was that all the page numbers were left out of the table of contents. So I can actually find American Riddle. And I don't think there are any bad words in here, so I don't have to worry.
I don't think so. I read it again about a half an hour ago.
Okay. American Riddle. When you can't figure out how to stop the war in Iraq, much less how to make enough money to pay your mortgage, moving the $180 from savings back into your checking account as if that will help. When it's all you can do to acknowledge the actual world and not lose yourself half the afternoon in People magazine, where the movie stars twirl like frosted cakes in a glass case at the Old Lady Baltimore Bakery on Throckmorton, before your hometown became so chic none of the kids from your high school could afford to live there. When you're so tired of reinventing yourself, you want to lie down on the road, right on the double yellow line in front of your driveway, exactly where two of your cats have been killed, and wait for someone to run you over. But with your luck, you'd probably just lose an arm, no doubt the right one. So you'd have to relearn holding the pencil against the page at the proper angle, and your sweater's sleeves would need to be hemmed to cover the stump, and then you'd really have something to complain about, as well as something in common with soldiers back from the Middle East, who left a precious part of themselves behind, which is where this poem begins and ends. How the hell are we going to stop the cavalier waste? How are we going to apologize?
And that fits with so many of your poems that it's an impossible conundrum. It's how can you apologize for so many things that have happened?
You can't. And the job of a life is to know that and try anyway, I think.
So for people who I think have gotten a taste of what Molly has to or will has to present right now and will have to present in a couple of weeks, tell us again about how they can find your new book. Although since it was published today, I imagine it's already in the local stores.
I think it's in some of the local stores. It is orderable from your local independent bookstore through Ingram or Baker & Taylor, who are two distribution companies. It is available online at that bookseller named after a race of women who used to shoot arrows and were quite fierce. And you can also get a hold of it from online from other bookstores, like Powell's has it. Powell's.com up in Oregon, which is one of my favorite bookstores, which is why I like to send people there.
Do you have a couple hidden on the inside pocket of your trench coat?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And there will be some at the reading, too. And I'm happy if you buy, wherever you get a hold of it, it's also going to be in all our local libraries in a couple of days. And I'd be happy to sign a copy, not the library copy, but any other copy, if anybody wants to get a hold of me. And I'm at mollyfisk.com.
And it's nice to know that you've done so much to support our library system that they're, even when times are tough, they're going out to get your book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, libraries save all of us. I think it's not even worth talking about anymore.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming in, Molly. And if you ever want to come in and just banter in the next 5 months, I'll be here.
I know what time you're on.
You
Thanks
know what
for
time
having
I'm
me
on.
Here.
And as again, the event is going to be at Sierra Mountain Coffee Roasters. I guess I can come right out and say it. Saturday, March 13th at 4 p.m. And you can go to Molly at mollyfisk.com for more information.
Definitely.
Welcome back to Booktown on KPMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome, and in the next half hour, I'll be talking with Penelope Curtis and Dave Comstock, who are people who've been around for a long time, Dave in particular, and have been involved in many local community and historical and cultural events. And right now, they are cooperating in producing what is, I guess, one of the two big events for this spring in Nevada County, the 35th Annual California Preservation Conference, which is going to take place in May, primarily in Nevada City, but also in a number of places around here. Before we get going, why don't you tell me a little bit more about that, and then we're going to talk about some of the book-related things that are going on in it.
Conference is May 12th through the 15th, and primarily the conference will be in Nevada City for the various sessions. There are about 30 different sessions that will take place in venues around Nevada City. The headquarters is at the Miners Foundry, and we will have a bookstore, exhibits, registration, and auction. A lounge for attendees to be able to sit and do computer work if they're in between sessions, and then throughout Nevada City, the Nevada City Vets Hall, Theater, Masonic, Odd Fellows, Nevada City Hall itself will all be venues for the various sessions. And then there will be attached to some of the sessions are mobile workshops. One will be walking through downtown historic Nevada City, looking at architecture and the blending of historical buildings with new buildings, such as the one on Union Street. In Grass Valley, most of the attendees will be staying at the various hotels and B&Bs there. We will have several events, the plenary session at the Del Oro, young professionals at Toffanelli's. The gala is being worked on right now as a location. There will be 3-minute success stories, a lot of fun, and evening at the St. Joseph's Cultural Center. So those are all of the different places. Study tours, people will take a bus and travel to various locations, one over Donner Summit, another one down through Placer County to some of the museums along there. And we have the one that is the main one, which is on the cover of our, I guess it's the
location.
It's
a great big postcard.
Yeah, the postcard, but it's also will be the cover of the program and so on, is the Bridgeport Bridge, and there will be a study tour down there.
Now, this is the conference of the California Preservation Foundation, the 35th conference. It's usually in much bigger cities. I guess last year was Las Vegas? No. Palm Springs. I knew it would be in California. Yeah.
Yes. For the previous years, they have traded back and forth between Northern California and Southern California. So 2 years ago, it was in Napa, and then last year in Palm Springs. They were in Hollywood. They've been in Sacramento. So they bounced back and forth. And in all of that time, they never really had focused on the issues that preservation issues that come up in the rural counties of California. And so in this case, they decided to move out a little bit and come to Nevada County, where we have many historic towns and buildings that represent many of the other cities and towns throughout Sierra Nevada.
And we'll go into more of the events going on in it, but I would say that they are fortunate that about 6 years ago, Dave Comstock's company, Comstock Bonanza Press, published Exploring Nevada County, an illustrated guide to local landmarks and historic sites, which fills a need that was there for probably 150 years, that tells you exactly where you can go if you want to see something of historical interest. I imagine a lot of these will be picked up in those couple of days.
That's an interesting thing because we're getting ready to come out with a new edition. And in fact, we have like 30 copies right now of the old one. And there's been a kind of a mad scramble to go out and find out what new plaques and monuments have arrived during the time since we published it. We don't just list official plaques, and those are easier to keep track of because the book is actually published in conjunction with the Landmarks Commission, they know which ones they have plaqued, but now they're scrambling because they're discovering that there are ones that the clampers have done and the native sons and daughters have done that they didn't tell us about in the intervening time. And so I'm busy compiling that, putting together. We're hopeful and probably will be able to have the new book out by the middle of May.
And I did notice when I was looking through it before that among the non-official ones are the clamper plaque for the Ladies of the Night in Nevada City, and I guess there's probably quite a few more of that sort.
Yeah. Well, there's the North Star House that got a clamper designation about 2 or 3 years ago, so that's probably not in there.
That's right, and it's also the Landmarks one. Yeah, that will be in there too. The clampers sometimes get a little clever in their plaques, and so one of the other new places is the Toll House down at Rough and Ready. And we didn't see, the people on the Landmarks Commission didn't see the plaque until we were there the day they were to put it up. And it suggests that that was the place where Joaquin Murrieta and Lola Montez used to have trysts.
Sure, sure.
And we haven't been able to authenticate that yet, but it's on the plaque.
Okay.
It would be fun.
So there's two big questions that come to mind now. One is, this event is almost 2.5 months away, and why are you pushing to get the word out now? Quite often I think it's good to have a bit of advance notice, but for most events, anything that's more than 2 or 3 weeks in advance, people tend to forget or file away and not find again.
Well, we're trying to get it into their long-term memory so that as we send out notifications, that'll keep on triggering, oh yes, I heard about that. And if they haven't marked their calendars right now, it will sort of be repetitive, and they'll say, oh, I've got to do it, I have to do it. And each time that we send out information, we'll have a little tidbit that may trigger something that says, oh, I'll sign up now because I want to go to that session, or I want to go on that study tour, or I would like to go to the 3-minute success story. So each time, at least in what I found, is that the more that you poke somebody, the more often that it'll stick.
And also, as you mentioned, on the large postcard, the Amgen Tour of California is coming right after this, so people have got to be very careful about getting accommodations if they want a place to stay here.
Exactly. So if we start now, and the various hotels and B&Bs have blocked rooms for the conference, but they'll only hold those rooms until March 31st. After that, then they'll open it up to Amgen. And when the Amgen decided that they were going to be in Nevada City on May 16th, various hotels started getting reservations. So there are lists waiting for the opportunity to make the reservation and be able to stay here. So everybody has to get their reservation in, register, and be ready to go.
The other question that comes to mind is, this is obviously like so many of these conferences that are so complex and so full of events, that you've been planning this for at least a year, and there's
about,
I mean,
18 months would be.
Yeah, okay.
When we got started around the 2008, the summer, we really started putting the steering committee together. Little by little, people signed on. Dave was one of the early ones for the bookstore, so it's been a process.
And you still have 2 months to go, so this is a huge undertaking to coordinate all of these events and all the things that people might want to do in these two towns in those several days. The other question is, what is the book angle? And I'll say, before, I am expecting Dave will probably answer this, but before you do, people who may not know of him and his publishing company, Comstock Bonanza, has been really not quite the only, but by far the most prominent publisher of local history for the last 30 years. You started writing your own dramatized histories of the Gold Rush back in the 70s, and you're indexed to the Howell North, or Thompson and West, rather, history of Nevada County. And in that time, the original focus was on the Gold Rush and the period immediately after that, but now you've gone much farther afield, and you have, what, do you have dozens of books out now?
Dozens of books out now, and we've reached right up into the 1930s. We have some other books that even have overlapped the 30s. We've tried to fill in between. We've got a bunch around 1895, trying to get the different periods in the county history. There are periods of Nevada County history that are a little bit slow, but every so often it becomes alive again and gets very exciting. So I didn't know I was going to do so many books over such a long period of time. And each year I think maybe there won't be any more. And that's what I thought at the beginning of this year. I know of a possibility of three now that came about in large part because of Gage McKinney's book about the 1930s that aroused a lot of interest. And so it goes on. And well, the very first book we did, which was in 1979, more than 30 years ago, that is, we published it then. Artis and I started in 78. Took us a year to put together that index. And the reason we did it, because I was seeing that for my books, I was going to need to know where to find things in that 1880 history. And nobody had ever made an index before. So we spent a year doing that. And we still sell copies. It's still a hand-lettered index, because that was in the days before computers, that is, before desktop computers. Fortunately, I had some experience in doing some books by hand before that.
Yeah, before he became an author, Dave was a book designer and actually designed books. And this was in the very primitive days in the 70s, designed books for university presses from your very remote house in the Chalk Bluff area.
Yeah, I had been working for the University of California Press in the 60s, and I have been trying to figure out a way to come live up in Nevada County, how to support myself. One of the things that people don't realize right now is that, we're in a recession right now, but things are much, much better today than they were in the 70s. I ran across a Chamber of Commerce piece of literature in which they were listing what the unemployment figures were during several years in the 1970s. This was in the 70s they published it. These days, no Chamber of Commerce would publish their, it ranged between 12% and 15% unemployment here then. And so it's much better now. But I was trying to figure out a way how I could come up here and make a living. And while working at the press in Berkeley, it occurred to me that this was the thing to do, that is, at least design books for publishing houses, because I could live at a distance and do it.
And that eventually led to you writing your own books, and well, the index, your own books, and then many other people's books.
Yeah,
I'm one of the people who had been waiting for years for Gage McKinney's book, The 1930s, No Depression Here. Not that I knew he was writing it, but I was just hoping somebody would write something like that. What are the books that may be coming out of that interest that aroused?
Well, one that I'm going down to McCollumney Hill either this week or next week to talk to a fellow that I've spent some time with, a fellow that he's a few years older than I am. He's almost 90 now, and he grew up in Nevada City. His father was the judge, Raglan Tuttle. And Raglan Tuttle's father had been a judge down in Auburn, came in the gold rush. His whole the family's full of lawyers, of gold rush lawyers. So anyway, this fellow grew up in the 30s, and he contacted me because of Gage's book. And turns out he's been writing blogs about his history and all kinds of things connected with that. So that's one of the books that'll be coming along.
And I'm amazed to see that you're still continuing this so enthusiastically. So now back to tie all this together, what is the book connection for the Historical Preservation Conference? Now, who are the attendees to a conference like this?
There are historical preservationists like myself involved in a building, in the rehabilitation or renovation of a building. They could be owners of historical buildings. Then there are architects, contractors, particularly contractors who have gotten involved in historical preservation, restoration, craftsmen, various craftsmen who are involved in reproducing elements of an historical building where one has become destroyed, or in some cases wood rot has taken in and they need to replace it. So it's a variety. Local government people are invited so they can get an idea about what are some of the historical preservation acts that will help in preserving their historic downtowns, Main Street people. It's a large list of people who, in one way or another, have some interest in preserving the historical character of their community.
And so what sort of books will they be recommending? Are the books in the bookstore will be ones by people who will be giving presentations, but I'm sure not just that.
Okay, I'll answer that. They're already soliciting titles of books from all of the people participating on panels and giving talks and what have you, books that they think that would be relevant to the thing they're going to be talking about, books that will be available so that people who wanted to follow up, take these books, buy these books and take them home with them. They're asking us locally for suggestions. Some have come in, a few have come in already from some of the officials of CPF, of the California Federation Preservation, books that they know about personally because they've been involved in this sort of thing for years, and friends of theirs, for instance, have recently published things that they think people would want to know about. The bookseller will be in charge of actually ordering the books, staffing the bookstore at the Miner's Foundry, doing the credit card work, all of the bookkeeping, everything else. It's a large job. Fortunately, the bookseller has had experience in similar kinds of things with other organizations or groups that came in here. They have assigned a person who is a regularly working with us and will be working on the book things so that they know, they're familiar with everything before. Last month, we did a walkthrough. We actually had a meeting of the whole steering committee and the people from CPF met at the Miner's Foundry, and we did a walkthrough of the various rooms there of the areas that were being contemplated for different purposes. And so that there will be lots of other exhibitors down in the lower part, but the bookstore will be separate. It'll be up behind the stage. And it will have its own separate area, much larger than the other exhibitors. And so that the bookseller has been invited to put any books in there that they thought were appropriate, including all of their local history books and things that we would normally be wanting to sell to people that come in here. It's interesting, earlier you said something about it couldn't be in Las Vegas because it would have to be in California. Well, they were a little dumbfounded originally when some of the people at CPF heard it was going to come up here, and they said, but that's in Nevada. Why are we going to Nevada? So they knew so little, many of them, about the foothill towns that they still did not really understand that Nevada County was in California.
We get that all the time.
Yes. So I'm just curious, what is the... Is there a period that the Preservation Foundation is mostly focused on?
No, they're mostly focused on the preservation of historic buildings. And in the case of the National Trust for Historic Preservation and the federal guidelines, that's usually a building that is 50 years or more older. So we keep adding a year, and anything in the 50s right now would be considered a historic building. Last year in Palm Springs, they focused on mid-century modern, which is the architecture, primary architecture of the Palm Springs area when the various celebrities and so on were building in in Palm Springs. And in this case, they'll be focusing on our historic buildings of the Gold Rush, and as Dave said, going up to probably the 30s, because that's the predominance. We have Art Deco in our town, so that will also be something that people may be working on. Mostly it's about how to preserve the buildings that are here. There will also be a focus on historic landscapes and gardens, so that's also a part of our culture.
We're just about out of time now. I'm just going to give a couple of contact sources if people want to know more about this. The California Preservation Foundation is at 415-495-0349 or cpf@californiapreservation.org. But you also mentioned that you're looking for volunteers and that they should call you directly?
Yes, that would, locals can call me for information as well, just so that the CPF staff is pretty busy, as everybody can imagine. So for local information, they can call my telephone number, which is 530-274-1398, and I'll be able to help them if they want to volunteer. We'd love to have volunteers or just any questions they have.
And now we're out of time. Thanks so much for coming in, and we're going to make way for what looks like it's going to be John Rumsey's Rock and Roll Party.